Play. Kids love it. Brains need it. But people don't always understand it. Here to help explain it, your hosts, Keisha and Heather. They're knee-deep in play.
Hey, everybody, we're back. It's Keisha.
And me, Heather.
And
I'm back.
Yes, we brought back Stephanie. Last week we talked with Steph, and we had gotten really deep into her telling us her story, getting a little deep about how she makes it happen, some tips she had for other home providers. And you know what? We got to talking, and we really, 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 really were drawn in, and we wanted to hear a little bit more from Stephanie, get some more insight on how she runs her program on a day-to-day basis. Welcome back, Stephanie.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Wonderful. After we aired your episode, I think a lot of home providers were really, really drawn in. I got comments like we wanted to hear more and, you know, amen and bravo. So we brought you back because of that. And I wanted to get into something that Heather had mentioned. Heather, at the end of last episode, you mentioned a few other things that during the conversation you started thinking about, and one of them was nap time and things like meals, and I believe you said something about outside play, maybe, I'm not sure, but there were a couple things that you had brewing up that you wanted to talk to Stephanie about. Can you remember any of those?
Well, I do remember that mostly Stephanie sort of talked about sort of the setup, and I remember, you know, we talked about the amazing idea that she has with the couch on wheels and everything else. So for me, because I haven't done home-based childcare, I more, you know, was enthralled with all of the resourcefulness and inventiveness, but I'm trying to overlay what a typical day in the programs that I've worked in over top of a home-based program. And so you know, when your brain has been traveling down a certain road for so long, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to backpedal. And so I'm thinking about basic things that would happen in a center and trying to figure out, well, how does that work in that environment? I know that on some groups on Facebook, sometimes people talk about, you know, different children sleep at different times. I mean, certainly in our infant program, because they're babies, some of them have a couple naps a day. They all have their own napping schedule. But in the rest of our center, the toddlers and the preschoolers all have sort of a set time frame that everybody sleeps and all the staff have lunch breaks and things like that. So in a home environment, how would you do that? How would you do the food thing? And the other thing is, when I was thinking about food regulations, I mean, we can't have outside food coming into our center. So in a home-based program, you know, there would be,
We have outside food. We have outside food coming in our center.
Okay, because with cross-contamination and all that kinds of stuff. So those are all the things that I was running through my head, kind of thing.
Right. So where to even begin? That's like a serious load of stuff.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. So I'm going to talk first, I think, about food, because to me that's a little easier and less in-depth than nap. And I'll just say what we do. We provide a morning snack and an afternoon snack. That's what we provide as far as food. And those are comprised of like a fruit or vegetable and then a grain that we bake. So all different kinds of breads, cheese bread, berry bread, whatever. So snacks are pretty simple. And that's, we serve one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and they're out for about an hour. And the children come as they're hungry.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm a famous interrupter.
No,
I'm so sorry. I've totally messed up your group. So you don't do lunch? Are you just half days?
No. So that's what we provide. Parents provide lunch. So the children all bring lunches. And I started that way, and I can't even tell you why. And after I started that way, I debated starting to provide lunches as well. But when I talked to my licensor about it, he said I was crazy because if I was able to, charge a good rate and also able to have the parents provide lunches and those lunches were healthy, then I should keep doing that because it's because the advantage of doing that to me, the biggest advantage is that I'm myself and my staff aren't focused on cooking. And preparing food in the middle of the day. We prepare the morning and afternoon snack, but those are really simple.
Yeah.
The bread, we'll bake a giant quantity and freeze some of it to save for another snack. So we bake probably 3 to 7 times a week, but it's a super simple process that the kids sometimes enjoy being involved with, and other times we just do it quickly. For me to add the lunches would really take away from us being able to be present with the kids. And so that's why we've chosen to keep that.
I was going to say, I can second that in my case, because when I did a home program, it was me by myself. And I opened and I wanted to serve lunches and, you know, I wanted them to be home cooked. And it was wonderful. And I think it's great for those that can do it. And I did it, but I felt like it was taking me away from the children and away from being able to engage, interact, observe, and just be there for a good chunk of time in the middle of the day. So I think that there are programs out there that have the ability to devote a person to be their cook or, you know, someone to just come in and do lunch, and that's wonderful if you can. And I will say my parents loved it. That's the one thing that they were not happy about when we moved to a center, and that because we weren't going to be providing lunch anymore. But I feel your pain, and I agree that if it's going to take away from the quality of the program itself, then don't do it.
Right. And I think, you know, I have friends that do it and do it well. Mm-hmm. They serve a lunch. I think of Michelle, who I know she works to accommodate all kinds of dietary needs and allergies and special diets. And yes, she puts together these amazing meals, and that's great for her. I know for me, that would be a real challenge. And so when I was looking at doing that and my licensor said, wait a second, you don't really need to do this. I went, oh, okay. Well, then maybe I'll just keep it simple. And I have been fortunate. Our parents have provided healthy meals. So that hasn't been a challenge either. That's kind of the food thing. What I was going to say, too, is that we try as much as possible to function in a way that kids eat when they're hungry. And I know that's been a conversation over the internet with different groups and stuff that you guys have probably seen as well. But, you know, the concept of adhering to schedules and what is the schedule, what does it look like, how fluid is it, how flexible is it for the kids. And we really work hard to try and accommodate the children's needs individually. So we have our morning snack out from 9 to 10-ish. If somebody's really hungry and asking for a snack a little early, it might come out a little bit early. Or if somebody really was rejecting eating and they get hungry at 10:15, I'm not going to tell them, no, it's snack's over, you don't get to eat until lunch. Because to me it's more important that they get to eat. And this is the same thing with lunch. They come when they're hungry for lunch. It's usually around between 11 and 12:30. And then afternoon snack is when they wake up. So technically it's supposed to be 3 to 4, but sometimes everybody's still sleeping all the way till almost 4. And so so it would be after they wake up then. But working to be flexible to accommodate what their bodies need.
It does make sense. Your morning snack sounds a lot like the morning snack schedule that we have. And what I found was that when we originally opened, we had snack immediately. It was kind of scheduled and we were all going to eat it together. And I found so many children turning away snack because they just didn't want it right then. Or they were, maybe they did want it, but playing was more important. So we started to alter that and say, okay, how about, like you said, we have snack open from 9 to 10 or 9 to 9:45 and allow them to come over as they were ready. And immediately mm-hmm. we noticed that the children were eating, whereas before a lot of them were passing it up because it just wasn't, mm-hmm. it wasn't when they needed it. So I think that that's awesome that you pay attention, like you said, to the individual needs of the children and accommodate that schedule to make it work. I think something that we could do better at is stretching past that boundary, stretching past the, you know, earlier than the 9 or later than the 10 if a child needs it. So I appreciate that schedule.
We have, my throat. We have open snack in the morning as well. It's you know, definitely it's hard when if children don't have open snack and they're first getting used to it, but then it's amazing once the kids are used to it. It's so beautiful that they just sort of come when they want to, and it's just so much more responsive and respectful.
Mm-hmm. It is. I agree. And I think that, I mean, it respects their play. It respects, first of all, our children arrive anytime between 7:30 and 9. So the kids who came at 9, they aren't hungry for snack usually right when they got here because they just got up and ate breakfast. Mm-hmm. However, the kids that came at 7:30, they got up really early and they're ready for snack at 9. And I mean, it recognizes that they're different people at different places, and I'm not always hungry at the same time every day, you know, so they don't need to be either, you know.
Another thing that I noticed too is when you have snack open like that, it promotes community and it also promotes independence. So I noticed that children come to snack together. So let's say they were building in blocks. I may hear the conversation start up, well, I'm hungry. What's for snack today? Mm-hmm. And then you see a clump of children going over together. They're still having a conversation. I think it's just so much more authentic. While I do see the importance of having a meal together, which I think we can still kind of get that during lunchtime, I definitely still feel like the children are together with who they want to be together with at the time that they're ready to be together. So I think there's value in that as well.
And I think, you know, this is a challenging topic for a lot of providers because, you know, you guys have touched on that. I'm here with other staff, and that does make it easier for me to accommodate this because one of us can be helping with snack while the other one is kind of meeting the needs of the kids that are playing and stuff. And so that there are extra challenges to overcome. I think anybody who really desires to do it, there can be ways we just have to work to figure out to make it work. Because, you know, I also do this on days when, say, we're low and it's just me by myself with a handful of kids. I still can make it work. It's more challenging, but I can make it work. But that to me is a really neat thing to be able to bless the kids with, that they can be independent and that they can be aware of their own needs. And to me, that carries over to the other question about naps, because we do nap differently. You guys both know this. I think you both do. But we do not have a set time for nap. And we used to do that the kids would come to lunch when they were hungry, and then they would go to nap after lunch. And we hit a point where, and this was last year, where we had a huge group of kids that were ready to go to kindergarten. And when we found ourselves in power struggles, nonstop power struggles with these kids about staying quiet on their naps, because we weren't forcing them to sleep, but we were telling them that they were going to nap after lunch. And then they're trying to be quiet on their mat, but that is so hard for a five-year-old to do when they're not ready to. And it felt like, you know, what we need is we need them to recognize when their bodies are tired, and we need them to have some sense of power in the situation, that it's not something that we are controlling. And so we made a conscious choice to let go of that. And I think I talked with you, Keisha, a little bit over the internet before we did it, because I think, don't you do more of a flexible nap where the kids rest when they're tired,
when they
kind of thing?
Rest.
And so I remember looking to you and going, okay. And I remember you saying something about, but remember, it's different because your kids are there all day.
whereas your kids get to leave a little earlier. My kids can be, some of them are here until 5:30. So that's a really, 7:30 to 5:30 is a really long day for some of these kids. But finding ourselves at that place of not wanting to create a power struggle with these children and recognizing the important thing to me is that they gain understanding of their own bodies and be able to choose to sleep when their body is tired, as opposed to have a negative association with nap where because it's controlled by an adult. And so we took that kind of leap of faith just to go for it. And it was really funny because the first week and a half, it was just this novelty of like, we had kind of loopy kids running around and after lunch. They were like, what? Because the way we started this, it was pretty organic. We didn't want to just say, okay, you don't need to take a nap.
Yeah, we didn't announce.
It wasn't that. But it was just, we shifted after lunch when a child was done eating. Our question for them became, so what do you feel like your body needs to do right now? And asking them that question. And they were a little bit puzzled at first, but of course the kids that needed to play immediately caught on and said, I think I need to play. And so for us, it was very simple to give them a chance to, okay, let's go. Why don't you get your things ready and you can go play outside for a while. And so for that first like week and a half or two, we had some loopy kids. We talked to the parents. I talked to the parents and let them know we were making this shift and why we were doing it and how we thought it was important that the kids be able to regulate their own sleep needs. And so I had very supportive parents. And I remember there was one little girl who she was not going to sleep. She was not tired, but you know she was. You could see it.
Uh-huh.
And so the first couple days, her mom picked her up, and apparently she fell asleep on the ride home, and they have a half-hour drive home or so. And she slept the whole ride home and stayed out all night and didn't get up till the next morning. And that mom was so, so gracious and understanding and did not mind that because she recognized the ultimate goal of getting her daughter to self-regulate. And that only took for that little girl, it was really fast because she started recognizing that it felt kind of crummy to fall asleep on the way home and not wake up until the morning. So the way that we did that and what we continually do now, that was, probably 8 months ago. When the kids choose what they're going to do, some of them do choose to go lay down right away after lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them come to lunch because they're tired. They'll recognize they're tired and they come to eat lunch because
they
want to go take
down.
A nap.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And other kids will, while they're eating, recognize that they're tired. And other ones will, I need to play. And we support that. Now, there are some kids that are less apt to acknowledge their body's need to sleep. And we do a lot of having conversations about tiredness with them. So some children, you know when you've seen children tired, some children fall a lot when they're tired. Some have a lot of social struggles when they're tired. Some just start melting down a lot when they're tired emotionally. And so we do a lot of conversing with them of, you know, just watching their play really closely and helping them recognize, I noticed you're falling a lot. Sometimes when bodies are really tired, they fall really easily. I think that you will have more fun if you rest your body and you give it a chance to get rested, and then you'll be more able to play and have fun. Or if it's a social thing, you're having a hard time playing with kids. That doesn't look like it's very much fun. I think you might have more fun if you take a chance to rest first. And does that make sense, kind of having those conversations with them?
It absolutely does, because then you're not doing something to the child. You're including the child in the process. You're giving them the power to make the decision for themselves. And then when you see that they need help, you're there to support them. You're there to give them those words and to kind of get them to look at things in a different point of view. Like, okay, I want to play, but she's right. I am having a little trouble here. Maybe I should rest. And sometimes that means reading a book. Sometimes that means, you know, hanging out in the loft. Other times that means getting out of cot and going to sleep. We have the same thing. And we notice after almost immediate. Like, we had that group of children who sleep every day, who are like, mm-hmm. goodbye, I don't care what's going on around me, I'm sleeping. Those children mm-hmm. never wavered. Then we had, like you said, we had the children who wanted to play. And then we had children who, some days they go play, and other days they say, Miss Keisha, I need my cot. You get their cot out, they get it ready, and they go to sleep. So almost mm-hmm. immediately, maybe after the couple weeks, almost, that's when we started seeing children making those choices for themselves. And as much right. as that's what we wanted, we were still shocked. We were like, whoa, right. you know what I mean? You have the option to go outside and play, and you are listening to your body and saying, you know what, I need a cot, and I'm going to lay down today. And right. I think it's just, it goes to show, and I think it can kind of even leak into cleanup time. It goes to show that when you give them the power and the trust,
mm-hmm.
that they are capable, that they are definitely capable of listening to their own bodies. They're definitely capable of regulating themselves. And we don't want to, like you had mentioned, have a negative connotation with nap time or a negative connotation right. with feeding time or with cleanup time.
Hey, this is Jeff, and this is what we call a cliffhanger. Want to hear the rest of the conversation? Tune in next week for another episode of Knee Deep in Play. This has been Knee Deep in Play. Join us next week for another episode. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Are you itching to connect with Heather or Keisha? You can find them at the Child Care and Bar and Grill Facebook page or at playvolution.com. That's playvolution.com in the forum section under podcasts. Drop them a note. They're hoping to hear from you.